Welcome to the debate. Imagine for a moment that your car's gas tank is completely full. You know, the battery is fully charged, the oil is fresh, the spark plugs are pristine, but when you turn the key, the engine absolutely refuses to turn over.
Right. And if we were talking about a machine, you would immediately assume something is broken.
Exactly. But in human biology, when we look at conditions like chronic fatigue and metabolic exhaustion, we see this exact same scenario. I mean, the fuel is in our bodies, the oxygen is in our blood, but the cellular engine refuses to run. So today, we are asking a radical question. What if that refusal to run isn't a breakdown, but, well, a highly intelligent choice by our own cells?
It is a fascinating premise, and it completely upends how we usually think about illness. We are digging into Dr. Bechara Saheli's recent white paper, Mitochondrial Life Capacity. And this paper presents a life-coherent framework that, honestly, totally redefines health. Instead of looking at health as just an absence of disease or, you know, having perfect blood test biomarkers, Saheli argues that health is the capacity for coherent energy transformation.
Yes. Coherent transformation.
Right. The core concept here is that our mitochondria are not just static little powerhouses sitting in our cells like we learned in grade school. They are dynamic, life-enabling flow systems. They are actively translating our ecological, social, and physiological environments into our literal, lived capacity to participate in the world. And my stance today is that while fatigue starts as a protective feature, it often becomes a locked biological loop, a tired but wired state that we must actively disrupt to restore that true life capacity.
And I represent the other side of this. I read this paper and kept thinking, maybe chronic fatigue isn't a glitch in the system. Maybe it is a valid, profoundly adaptive signal of an internal energy gap. My position is that we need to stop forcing the system, embrace what the text calls Wu-Wei physiology, and expand our restorative margins so the body can do its hidden healing labor.
I hear that, but honestly, I think that is a dangerous trap. Yes, I agree. The paper shows how fatigue starts as a protective feature, but it also explicitly warns us about how that feature mutates into a bug. It becomes a locked compensation. I look at this research and see a clear mandate. When an initially projective signal dysregulates and stalls, you cannot just passively accommodate it. You have to intervene.
Well, let's unpack why that signal happens in the first place, because the protective intelligence of the human body is just staggering. The paper introduces these brilliant concepts of metaboception and mitoception. Essentially, our cells have their own internal awareness. They are constantly sensing whether they can safely meet the energy demands we are placing on them.
Mm-hmm.
And when the demand exceeds their capacity to transform that energy, the cells release specific signaling molecules, pathways like GDF15 and FGF21.
And those aren't just arbitrary biological markers floating around in the bloodstream. They are direct communications to the brainstem.
Precisely. They are sending a message to the brain saying, we cannot keep this pace safely. In this framework, fatigue is not a failure of willpower. It is not a mere symptom, and it certainly isn't laziness. It is a regulatory command wrapped in a feeling. It is the felt experience of our energetic affordance narrowing because the cost of action is simply too high.
Right, the wall.
Yeah, if you've ever experienced deep burnout or chronic fatigue, you know exactly what this feels like. It feels like hitting an invisible wall. And my perspective is that our primary therapeutic imperative must be to stop forcing the system against that wall. We have to adopt what Saheli calls Wu-Wei physiology, which is the practice of yielding, of, you know, minimal forcing. If we yield to the fatigue signal, we prevent catastrophic cellular damage and give the body the unobstructed space to heal itself.
Okay, the framework absolutely does a brilliant job mapping the origin of that fatigue signal. I do not dispute that fatigue begins as a highly adaptive mechanism. However, if you are a listener who has experienced that deep burnout, you also probably know the agonizing feeling of the tired but wired state.
Oh, sure.
You are exhausted to your bones, but your brain won't let you sleep. Your heart is racing. You feel completely on edge. The text explicitly warns us about this. It calls them locked compensations.
But that wired feeling is just the body trying to keep you alert in a state of vulnerability. It's protective.
It is much more destructive than that, actually. What is happening biophysically in chronic states is that the organism enters a debilitating loop. The body is frantically mobilizing energy through the HPA axis, the hypothalamic pituitary adrenal axis, so it is dumping cortisol and adrenaline into your system, keeping the brain hypervigilant and trying to force action, while simultaneously the mitochondria sensors are trying to conserve energy by enforcing fatigue.
Well, let me just finish this thought. The biological signal has completely decoupled from external reality. You are pressing the gas and the brake at the exact same time. Merely accommodating this narrowed affordance field traps the patient in a state of suspended animation. True healing requires active, targeted interventions to rehabilitate mitochondrial dynamics. We cannot just wait for the body to fix a broken sensor. We have to actively intervene.
I think we need to drill down into what that sensor is actually detecting, because it is not broken. It is detecting a reality our diagnostic tests often miss entirely. The paper draws a very clear line between an energy deficit and an energy gap. An energy deficit is simple. You haven't eaten enough. You don't have enough calories.
Right.
But an energy gap, which is what drives this chronic fatigue, means the fuel is absolutely there. The calories are present, but the transformation capacity is bottlenecked. The electron transport chain inside the mitochondria cannot pass electrons efficiently. This could be due to localized hypoxia, background inflammation, or disrupted cristae architecture, which, you know, are the physical folds inside the mitochondria where the energy-making magic actually happens.
Yes, and when those cristae are damaged, it leads to severe electron congestion. The paper describes this beautifully as reduction stress. It is a situation where the NADH to NAD plus ratio rises dangerously high because electrons are backing up upstream.
Let's pause and make sure that mechanism is crystal clear for a second. So put that in plain English, think of NAD plus as an empty delivery truck ready to pick up electrons, and NADH as a full truck that has already picked up its cargo.
Okay, I like that.
Reductive stress means you have a massive traffic jam of full delivery trucks and absolutely nowhere for them to unload because the factory lines, the cristae, are bottlenecked.
That is a perfect way to visualize it. The cellular highway is gridlocked.
Exactly. Now, I see why you think that traffic jam means we need to jump in and start manually redirecting traffic. But let me give you a different perspective on how we should treat that backup. Think of the cell's energy economy like a municipal power grid during a massive summer heat wave. Everyone is running their air conditioning, the factories are running full tilt, and the demand is skyrocketing. The power grid has automated safety sensors. When the transformers are at risk of literally melting down from the heat, the system intentionally triggers rolling blackouts to save the physical infrastructure of the grid.
So you were saying the GDF-15 signaling pathway is the automated sensor?
Yes. GDF-15 acts exactly like that automated grid sensor. It triggers the rolling blackouts, the physical fatigue, the social withdrawal, the cognitive slowing, to prevent the entire cellular grid from melting down via catastrophic oxidative damage. If a city manager went in and just manually overrode those sensors to keep the power on, the grid would catch fire and be destroyed. Overriding the GDF-15 fatigue signal with stimulants or forced exercise without fixing the underlying transformation bottleneck is biologically reckless.
I'm sorry, but I just don't buy that. Let me tell you why. The power grid analogy is structurally elegant, but we must adhere to the specific scientific guardrails established in the text. The paper is highly rigorous in stating that GDF-15 is a candidate pathway. It is not the sole sovereign mechanism of fatigue. More importantly, the text clearly notes that while fatigue is protective acutely, it becomes, and I quote, life-narrowing when unresolved. To use your grid analogy, what happens if the automated sensors themselves are degraded by years of chronic stress?
You are assuming the sensor can fail in that way.
The biology tells us it does. If those sensors are damaged by prolonged inflammation, they will trigger rolling blackouts even when the temperature outside is a mild 70 degrees and there is surplus power sitting idle in the generators.
But
the system is misjudging the threat. By treating a faulty sensor as an absolute biological truth that must be yielded to, you are condemning the patient to unnecessary, permanent functional decline. The brain's metaboceptive model of the body's energy budget has become pathologically conservative. It is hoarding energy for a crisis that is no longer happening.
Wait, let me make sure I'm wrapping my head around your stance here. Are you saying the fatigue itself is a mistake? Because I argue the threat is still very real. It is just invisible to our standard diagnostic models. And this is exactly why the cellular grid needs that conserved power. We have to look at the paper's concept of hidden healing labor. When you are profoundly fatigued, your body is not doing nothing. It is executing massive, incredibly energy-intensive biological programs beneath the surface.
You are talking about the internal cleanup processes.
Yes, things like autophagy, which is the literal cellular recycling program where the cell digests its own damaged parts. We are talking about proteostasis, which is the complex work of refolding damaged bent proteins so they function again. We are talking about immune resolution and tissue remodeling. These processes cost a tremendous amount of ATP, you know, the cellular currency. A fatigued body is simply redirecting its energy budget inward. It is pulling power from your muscles and your cognition so it can fund this hidden healing labor. If you implement active disruption, if you force activity or physical rehabilitation on a system that is deep in hidden healing labor, you interrupt the exact maintenance required to restore those mitochondrial folds, the cristae, and clear out the traffic jam.
That's a compelling argument, but have you considered the explicit biological cost of prolonged conservation? The text specifically asserts that movement supports mitochondrial biogenesis. Mitochondrial quality control is not a passive waiting game. It is a highly dynamic cycle of fission, fusion, and mitophagy.
We should probably break those terms down.
Let's do it. Fission is when a mitochondrion cuts out its damaged segments. Fusion is when healthy mitochondria merge together to share resources across the network. And mitophagy is taking out the trash, destroying the broken parts entirely. But here is the critical piece. You need biogenesis to rebuild new capacity. Biogenesis is the creation of brand new mitochondria, and it is primarily triggered by energetic demand.
But demand is what caused the bottleneck in the first place.
Overdemand did, yes, but zero demand is just as deadly. If we fully surrender to the narrowed affordance field and just wait for your hidden healing labor to finish, we actively degrade our mitochondrial mass and quality. The paper draws a direct mechanistic link between aging, frailty, sarcopenia, which is severe muscle wasting, and the loss of this mitochondrial network renewal. If you prescribe unbroken conservation without rhythmic exertion, the mitochondria physically atrophy. You lose your reserve respiratory capacity entirely. Conservation without demand does not lead to restored capacity. It leads to permanent sarcopenic capacity loss. You don't heal, you shrink.
I am not suggesting permanent bed rest or passive deterioration. I think we need to clarify what Wu-Wei physiology actually means in the context of this framework. I admit the term sounds esoteric, but Wu-Wei is strictly defined in the text as minimal forcing. It does not mean lying in a dark room doing nothing. It means acting with maximal biological coherence, where the demand you place on your body is beautifully and precisely matched to your current capacity. Let's go back to that tired but wired loop you were so concerned about.
The loop where the body is dumping adrenaline while enforcing fatigue, yes.
White. That devastating loop is exactly what happens when the external niche, the world we live in, continually forces demand on a depleted system. The organism is locked in a state of simultaneous mobilization and conservation because the environment will not allow it to rest. The rent is due, the inbox is full, the structural inequalities are pressing down. The only way out of that loop is not to force the body internally with targeted exertion, but to completely change the external reality. We have to restore the civil commons and the salutogenic affordance field.
And what does that look like practically in terms of the biology?
It means creating a deep, profound environment of safety. It means ensuring access to restorative sleep, clean air, nourishing foods, and true social dignity. The paper is clear. Threat is energetically expensive. Social isolation, economic uncertainty, and discrimination literally increase the vigilance cost on the organism. They keep that sympathetic nervous system tone high. If we want to break the tired but wired loop, we have to lower the energetic cost of existing in the world. We don't force the mitochondria to produce more energy through physical rehabilitation. We reduce the parasitic energy drain of simply trying to survive in a hostile niche. We create an environment where yielding is actually safe.
I absolutely agree that the external niche is a critical piece of the puzzle. The salutogenic affordance field you are describing, the clean air, time, safety, dignity, that functions as our external mitochondrial infrastructure. It is essential. But you are describing a scenario where the internal biology will automatically write itself once the external environment is perfect. And, well, the biophysics of chronic illness simply do not support that. Internal salogenesis, which is the biological completion of the healing cycle, can stall even in a perfect environment.
How so? If the environment is safe, why wouldn't the cells realize that?
Look at the paper's description of the cell danger response. To use a metaphor, think of a normal healthy cell like a factory operating in a peacetime economy. It is making consumer goods, taking in supplies, and functioning smoothly. But when the cell detects a threat, like a virus, a toxin, or even severe psychological trauma, it shifts into a wartime economy. The factory completely stops making consumer goods and starts manufacturing tanks and ammunition.
Translating that to biology, the cell shifts away from normal oxygen-based energy production.
Exactly. It shifts away from oxidative phosphorylation and moves toward rapid, inefficient ATP production via glycolysis. And more importantly, it starts pumping out intense reactive oxygen species signaling to defend the tissue. It literally weaponizes its own exhaust to fight off the perceived invader.
Because, to use the metaphor, the cell believes the war is still raging outside the factory doors.
Yes, but in chronic illness, that mitochondrial phenotype remains biologically locked in defense mode long after the external threat has passed. The factory never receives the treaty that the war is over. The mitochondria refuse to return to their normal peacetime differentiation and oxidative metabolism. You can put a patient in a perfectly safe, quiet room with optimal nutrition and zero social stress, and their cells will still be generating severe inflammatory signaling because the dynamic quality control cycle has physically broken down. Mitophagy is impaired. The trash is piling up in the factory.
So your argument is that safety isn't enough to sign the peace treaty.
Precisely. To break that biological lock, you need targeted, dynamic recovery. You might need specific metabolic substrates to jumpstart the engines. You might need precisely titrated oxidative stress through paced exercise to trigger NRF2 pathways.
NRF2 being the body's internal antioxidant fire extinguisher system.
Exactly. You sometimes have to create a tiny, controlled fire like a brief bout of intense exercise to force the body to turn the fire extinguishers back on. You might even need pharmacological disruption of the integrated stress response. Passive environmental support is beautiful and it is necessary, but it is deeply insufficient for a biological system that has forgotten how to complete the salogenesis cycle.
I understand the temptation to actively intervene. When you look at a stalled cell danger response, it is human nature to want to aggressively pry the system out of it. But we have to respect the central synthesis of this framework. The life capacity model demands that we view fatigue not as a localized error to be fixed, but as a profound biological truth about the entire organism-niche relationship. My stance remains that we must respect this interoceptive signal. If salugenesis is stalled, it is because some aspect of repair is still incomplete, even if we can't measure it yet. We must honor the body's hidden healing labor by expanding restorative margins. We must embrace Wu Wei physiology, trusting that if we remove the forcing mechanisms, whether they are physical, psychological, or civilizational, the dynamic intelligence of the mitochondrial network will flow like water around a stone, naturally guiding the organism back to coherent energy transformation.
And my stance is that while the framework undeniably validates the biological reality of fatigue, proving it is a metabolic reality, not a psychological failing, its deepest insights lie in the identification of locked compensations. A biological system can and does get stuck. When salugenesis stalls, when the organism is caught in the exhausted hypervigilance of the tired but wired loop, we cannot simply accommodate the dysfunction. We must carefully, precisely, and actively break these dysregulated signaling loops. We have to purposefully rehabilitate mitochondrial dynamics to reopen the field of safe action. Otherwise, we risk allowing a temporary protective mechanism to become a permanent life-narrowing condition.
Yet, despite our very different approaches to intervention, whether we yield to the signal or actively break the loop, I think we both find ourselves in deep agreement on the paper's most transformative insight. Dr. Saheli has shown us that medicine must definitively move away from a purely disease-centered imagination. We can no longer look at human health as a collection of isolated biomarkers and siloed pathologies.
Absolutely. The framework forces us to look at the organism-niche relation. It proves that our internal biological energy economy is in constant, intimate dialogue with our external social, psychological, and ecological environments. The fact that a severe psychological threat and a physical viral infection both ultimately translate into the exact same mitochondrial redox burden is honestly a staggering unification of human experience. It means our cells don't differentiate between biological danger and social danger.
It truly is staggering. It completely changes the way we understand what it means to be alive. Symptoms are not isolated mechanical failures on a dashboard. They are dynamic, holistic signals of our mitochondrial life capacity, trying to navigate a complex world. And there's so much more to explore in this white paper, particularly regarding the civilizational applications, how we might go about building a society that actively protects rather than ruthlessly extracts our biological margins.
Because right now our society is explicitly engineered for extraction. We demand constant energetic output from people while actively degrading the very salutogenic fields, the clean air, the living wages, the time for rest required for cellular repair.
We started this conversation by talking about that simple binary gas gauge on a dashboard. But it turns out the human body isn't a machine that just runs blindly until its tank is totally empty. It is a highly intelligent predictive system that will change the very shape of your lived reality to protect you from yourself and from your environment. The question we leave you with today is not whether your personal gas gauge is full or empty, but rather, what is the true state of your restorative margins? Thank you for listening.